This episode contains references to physical abuse and disordered eating that some listeners may find triggering.
And there may be more than a few lip slips.
Please be advised.
It's February 1st, 2004. The Super Bowl halftime show has just ended, and 70,000 fans are screaming their heads off at the Reliance Stadium in Houston, Texas. But in the pitch blackness of center stage, Janet Jackson is so quiet, she's barely breathing. She's in shock. Something's just gone very, very wrong. Her left hand is clutching her right breast as she tries in vain to hide the silver nipple shield Justin Timberlake just accidentally exposed on live television. Next to her, Justin is almost trembling. He's murmuring to himself in disbelief. What just happened? Did that just happen? Janet holds her breast tighter. This was supposed to be her victory lap. She'd wanted to finish her act and bask in the glow of a full 360 degrees of applause. I mean, it's what she'd pictured when she agreed to headline the show. But now, the roar of the crowd feels like an attack. She has to get away. Now. As the telescreens cut wide, the second half of the game resumes as though nothing even happened. But Janet knows Houston is about to have a big problem. As she scrambles to get off stage, she snatches a towel from a stagehand and wraps it around her torso. Then she sprints towards her dressing room. That jet black PVC corset that made her feel so sexy, suddenly it feels so tight she can barely breathe. Janet can feel the tears coming, but she grits her teeth and tries to hold them back. Her hands are busy clawing at her costume, tearing it at the seams. The heavy leather corset drops to the floor with a thud. Janet peels off the pants and throws on her street clothes, a hat, and sunglasses, then opens the door to her dressing room. "Get me out of here," she says to her assistant. As she follows her assistant through a labyrinth of backstage tunnels, Janet's head is down and her hat is pulled low. Her dark sunglasses guard her teary eyes. She doesn't want to see or talk to anyone. If she can make it out of the building, she'll be home free. But suddenly, MTV's production coordinator is standing between her and the exit. "Miss Jackson," the woman calls to her. Janet freezes. She forces herself to look up. To her surprise, the woman is smiling. "Congratulations on a wonderful show."
"Oh, okay. So I guess, much like myself, MTV is Team Titty."
So it's definitely not the greeting Janet is expecting. But here's the thing. It turns out no one actually saw anything. Not really. At least not live and in the moment. I mean, sure, a lot of people were like, "Wait, was that what I think it was?" But then they went back to the Super Bowl. It's only in the aftermath that the whole thing becomes a little more clear. I mean, yes, Justin was supposed to pull a strip of that PVC corset off her right breast, but he was only supposed to reveal her red lacy bra underneath. And if Janet's malfunction had happened like 10 years earlier, it probably would have become a pop culture myth, like Elvis is alive or Tupac is secretly hiding out in Cuba.
Both obviously true.
Obviously. But in 2004, the world and technology is changing, and Janet knows what's coming. She's endured all kinds of scrutiny and criticism in the past, especially when it comes to her body. But this time is different. This time, people will be able to rewind, zoom in, scrutinize, and speculate to their heart's content. And as much as Janet might hope against hope that this too will pass, it won't. Because while pop stars and music trends might come and go, the internet never forgets. From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, Janet struggled to distinguish herself from her notoriously successful siblings and wrestled her independence from family patriarch Joe Jackson. Now, Janet's strength will be tested in the toughest challenge of her life, fighting the sexist double standards of the entertainment industry. And just like her coming of age, she'll realize that the only way she can live with herself is on her own terms. This is episode 2, Unbreakable. It's April 1990. Inside a rehearsal studio at Madison Square Garden, fogged over windows hide the bright lights of the Big Apple. Techno cymbals crash out an intro, while 11 backup dancers hurl their limbs around the room. Together, they crouch low to the ground and pop back up in perfect unison. Their bodies are glistening with sweat. It's been a long day, and it's about to get longer. Because that's when Janet Jackson steps up to the mic. She's already a musical pioneer. She's 23 years old and on top of the world. She whirls her body gracefully, perfectly in sync with her dancers. At least until she stumbles. The choreographer cuts the tape. Janet grimaces and steps back into her starting position. She's determined to get this right. But everything about what she's trying to do is so new. It's different from everything she's done before. After the success of Control, Janet doubled down on her gut. Her label wanted more of the same, but she wanted to push her music forward. So she made a concept album addressing ideas she was passionate about, like politics and culture. And that album, Rhythm Nation 1814, was a smash hit. The songs are daring and fresh, and everyone loves the message of inclusivity. But only 2 months into the Rhythm Nation World Tour, reviews are pretty middle of the road, and sales have started to dip. The problem isn't the message, it's the messenger. The Miami Sun Sentinel even prints a review saying that she does not present a serious threat to Brother Michael.
Damn, did Joe Jackson write that article?
Mm-hmm, he's the reporter. Now, Janet loves her brother, but understandably, she hates the comparison. And she especially hates the snide inference that all the Jacksons are a packaged product. The New York Times compares her to both Michael and Prince, adding that she isn't as good as either. And the Washington Post kills with kindness, saying that while she doesn't quite command the stage, she's effective enough. I mean, it's a real blow to her ego to get such damning feedback, especially since this is her first tour.
Wait, she's never toured?
Nope. Even though she's already on album number 4, Janet loves the studio process. When she's collaborating on songs, doing takes, tweaking the mix, in the recording studio, she's totally in control. But performing live is a whole different story. On stage, nothing ever goes exactly according to plan. You need to be spontaneous. You need to be able to improvise. You need to trust that less than perfect can still make a great show. It's something that's really hard for a perfectionist like Janet to deal with. And so far, in the Rhythm Nation tour, she's definitely struggled. On stage, she's a little tight and a little tentative. For any other artist, these would just be growing pains. But for Janet, it's a huge problem. How this tour goes will determine the rest of her career. Now, Janet's not the only one asking, "What have you done for me lately?" The execs at her record company are on her heels, and they're determined to get an answer. Ever since Janet broke out with Control, she's felt like she's on a ladder that only goes one way, up. And if you stop going up, you get the boot. So Janet's headed for international megastardom, or else. And that's why she's in the rehearsal studio with her whole team on what was supposed to be their day off. Janet is determined to make this tour a success. And she's doing it the only way she knows how, smiling through the pain and outworking everyone else in the room.
God, what is this, my high school cheerleading camp?
It's not the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, I can tell you that.
Nothing is.
Seriously, though, Janet nods to the choreographer to restart the tape, but he hesitates, and she looks around at her team. Her dancers are all panting, rubbing sore muscles, and avoiding eye contact with her. She looks up at the clock. It's almost 11 p.m., Janet sighs. She doesn't want to stop, but she knows she has to. The dancers all shuffle out of the room, and Janet looks down, feeling defeated. Why can't she get this right?
She's trying to keep so many instructions and moves and details straight in her head, and every take just makes her shoulders creep closer and closer to her ears. That is until she feels a soothing pair of hands wrap themselves around her from behind. Rene Elizondo Jr. is a wiry dude with a shock of spiky black hair. A razor-fine goatee frames his thin face. He locks his eyes on Janet, and she pulls him in tight.
All right, well, this guy must be amazing for her to look past a razor-fine goatee.
Hard agree. So Rene is one of Janet's backup dancers. He's also her boyfriend of 3 years and her most trusted creative partner. But Janet is pretty quiet about this relationship, at least publicly. Looking around at Hollywood marriages, Janet noticed most don't last. And having grown up in the public eye, she wants someone just for her. Someone who's familiar with the creative process, but real. Rene is an old friend who's been with her through thick and thin. They're in love, and they also work together, developing concepts and writing lyrics. Rene's as determined to make it as Janet, which is why, after a quick hug, they get back to work. Janet goes through the routine again while Rene watches. Immediately, he spots what's wrong. Janet's not in sync with the choreography. And if it's not the right fit for her, it'll never work. He tells her, you need to dance how you feel. If the moves aren't right, it'll never be perfect. So she tries again. But this time, she dances not from her head, where she's trying to remember steps, but from her heart. And as she makes it her own, Rene watches her every move, capturing the adjustments. The next morning, back in rehearsal, he walks the other backup dancers through the changes. When she gets up on stage that night, Janet throws herself into the show, totally at ease. The crowd feels her energy like never before. Ticket sales pick up, and the tour sells out, eventually setting records for the most successful debut tour in history. For the first time in her life, Janet is ditching the instructions, ditching the plan, and going with the flow. After years of being a perfect daughter, a perfect recording artist, a dutiful actor, Janet's getting in touch with her own voice. And with Rene on her team, she feels unstoppable. Janet steps into the shower. The warm water massages the tension from her shoulders, relaxing her entire body. It's January 1993, and the past 12 months have been nonstop. Rhythm Nation 1814 dominated the charts. The album went 6 times platinum and produced 5 number 1 singles. It's a new record. The last person to hold the record was Janet's brother Michael for Thriller. It looks like baby sisters all grown up. In fact, when Janet's contract with A&M Records expired, she broke another record when Virgin signed her for somewhere in the ballpark of $30 to $50 million.
Damn, that ballpark is so big, Kanye would try to move into it.
Oh, burn. Virgin also gave Janet what A&M never could, full creative control. Between logging blissful studio hours in Minneapolis with Jimmy and Terry, Janet's on set, dipping her toe back into her first love of acting, with a starring role alongside Tupac in John Singleton's Poetic Justice.
Which, I just got word, he's currently filming the sequel of in Cuba.
Mm-hmm, with a cameo from Elvis.
Yeah.
The movie helps her discover a brand new, more adult side of herself. And between her on-screen chemistry with Tupac and her new music videos, the public gets the message loud and clear. Janet's a grown woman now, intelligent, sexual, and proud. And Rene is there for her every step of the way. When actor Gary Dorden runs his fingers down Janet's belly and unbuttons her blue jeans, Renee's standing there watching, because this was all his idea.
Okay, what in the Jerry Falwell Jr. is going on here?
Don't panic. It's just a music video for Janet's single Again, and Renee's directing the whole thing. Even though he's Janet's boyfriend, he knows the totally steamy video is going to show the world just how deep and complicated the real Janet Jackson is. But for right now, the real Janet Jackson is taking a rare 20 minutes to herself. She turns up the heat, feels the water run down her exhausted body, and soaks until the bathroom is clouded in mist. Stepping out of the shower, Janet reaches for a towel. In the foggy mirror, Janet catches sight of the back of her arm. She gazes at the gentle weave of her lean muscles, rippling under her chestnut brown skin. Over her shoulder, she smiles coyly at her reflection. Renee is always telling Janet that her body is perfect. The thought makes her giggle self-consciously. She's always hated her body, how short and stocky it is, and all the places that stick out when she wants them to tuck in. But when Renee kisses every part of her, she feels the shame wash away. And today, for the first time, Janet sees what he's talking about. Staring at her reflection now, Janet thanks God she's no Malibu Barbie. Her body is strong, yet soft, all deep curves and muscle, lean from use. She's a living, breathing woman, not a doll. Facing the mirror, Janet's hands rise automatically to cover her breasts. Laughing at her own modesty, she forces her arms down. Because why not? Then she drapes them over her head. Back straight, chest out, she stares herself down in the mirror. And then it hits her. A vision of herself in this pose, totally exposed, totally vulnerable. Pride, power, and a little mystery. Janet laughs to herself just thinking about it. A few months later, during the shoot for her new album cover, it takes Janet a while to work up the courage to share her idea with the photographer. When she finally does, he dismisses the crew so they have some privacy. Only Renee stays behind. When the room is clear, Janet poses, confident and beautiful. But this time Renee is standing behind her, just out of sight, and covering her breasts with his hands. Virgin Records loves the shot, but it's too risque for the album cover. Instead, Rolling Stone puts it on the cover of their September issue. The photo becomes instantly iconic. But the world doesn't see a young woman coming into her power by shedding her inhibitions. They just see a sex symbol. By 1995, Janet is exhausted. Her self-titled album is a hit, and her tour is a massive success. Professionally, she's thriving, but emotionally, she's at her lowest. The album is so big that it breaks records, and it cements her place as a sex symbol. But the more the media lusts after her, the tighter Renee, who's now her husband, holds her in his grip. Even though he's always been supportive, Janet starts to realize that Renee is very possessive of her image. He starts to act as though he's the mastermind behind her success. When Janet wants to go out, he tells her no. He only wants fans to see her the way she looks in her videos. The same guy who helped her develop a real sense of confidence around her body is trying to knock her down a peg. After the Janet tour, Janet goes home to hide. She stops making music, stops performing, and stops going out in public. She barely talks to Renee.
I mean, that last one is starting to sound like a good thing.
Yeah, true. The last time Janet was this stuck, she was living under Joseph's thumb. But now there's no one to escape from but herself. And that's when it hits her. She can't work through the pain, but she can write through it. She can put it all in her music. So she does. Janet writes about her life in excruciating detail. She talks about the impossible quest for perfection. She covers her struggles with depression and self-worth. She delves into the abusive relationships and eating disorders. She even touches on how it feels to watch her beloved friends die of AIDS. And as Janet writes, she releases pain she's held onto since before she can remember. And she does it all on her own, without Renee. Janet can't save her marriage, but her pain finds purpose in the album that ensues. The Velvet Rope is yet another new Janet, and it takes the world by storm. The music is still funky with an up-tempo dance beat, but the lyrics tell a story of hardship and hope. Despite the heartbreak of divorce, Janet knows she's on the right path. No more smiling through the pain. From now on, she'll channel whatever life throws at her into the music. She does not need to be perfect anymore. She's ready to be fully and completely exposed.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. And yeah. So mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
It's January 2004, 1 month before Janet's next big performance, and she's in the studio. Janet's rehearsing the title track from Rhythm Nation, 15 years after its release. She could perform these moves in her sleep, but the backup dancers want to go over it a few more times. Janet's only too happy to comply. After all, this is for the Super Bowl. The door to the studio opens, and in walks Justin Timberlake. Actually, he's not walking. He's so excited to be there, he's joining in with the dancers, matching the choreography perfectly on beat.
Oh, so would you say they're all
Don't say it. Okay, fine. Sure, they're in sync. But at this point, Justin's more like the phoenix that rose from the ashes of NSYNC. Back in 1998, Janet handpicked the boy band as the opening act for her Velvet Rope tour. And now Justin's a rising star. His solo debut, Justified, wasn't a hit, but it impressed Janet. And his latest single, Cry Me a River, sparked on the charts. Janet loves the song. Plus, she loves this guy. There's a sweet innocence about him. Justin still gets starstruck around Janet. Despite his bold, sexual confidence on stage, offstage he calls her Miss Jackson and blushes when they make eye contact. It's cute. And let's face it, it's a little sexy too. And so is the routine they're planning for Justin's new hit, Rock Your Body, the grand finale of the halftime show. The ultra-steamy moves over Justin's saucy lyrics makes both of them dissolve into laughter. There's just one problem. Janet's skirt. Turns out it's really hard to rock a body that's in a skirt. But Janet and Justin keep trying because they're planning a super sexy surprise. At the end of the song, Justin's going to whip her skirt off to reveal Janet's black leather pants underneath.
Okay. Now, I'm not a master of illusion, but I feel like it's really hard to hide pants under a skirt.
You make a valid point.
Thank you.
But weirdly enough, it's actually something Mick Jagger did to Tina Turner at Live Aid back in 1985. But Tina wasn't wearing pants, and that moment has not aged well. Which is why Justin and Janet quickly decide to drop it from the act. But they can't stop thinking. This is the Super Bowl. And the song they're dancing to is dripping with sex. Justin may look like an innocent little angel, but his lyrics go way beyond innuendo. They're very, very clear about Justin and the body in question. And how exactly he wants to rock said body. So Janet and Justin huddle up in her dressing room and agree. They've got to come up with a big finish. And while it won't be a skirt, maybe Justin could rip off something smaller. Say a strip of leather from her catsuit. They lock eyes and agree. The Super Bowl is go big or go home. So they go big. It's the day after the Super Bowl, and Janet's at her kitchen counter, elbow deep in a McDonald's feast. When hard situations make her life feel out of control, Janet eats to stop the damage. But this time, it's not working. CBS received 500,000 complaints about what happened last night. Her costume malfunction was the most mortifying moment of her life. But it was a moment. 9/16 of a second, to be precise. And Janet was more than happy to forget it. But apparently, the universe disagrees. Because one thing is clear. No one will be forgetting what happened anytime soon. Those 9/16 of a second have put Janet directly into the crosshairs of a group called the Parents Television Council.
Okay, that sounds like a group that only formed because someone promised free pie.
Yeah, I wish that was the only reason they formed. It's this conservative civilian watchdog group that's been on the warpath about cleaning up the airwaves for years. In a normal year, their barrage of letters and phone calls would just get shrugged off as noise. But 2004 is an election year. And in an election year, everyone's reaction is 10 times bigger than what it would be normally. Hence the barrage of television coverage Janet's staring at. Janet feels sick to her stomach, and it isn't the food. Today was meant to be an epic cheat day, a mini break to chill out and enjoy all of her favorite forbidden foods before tomorrow kicks off another grueling marathon of rehearsals and dieting. But with her mind swirling into a panic, Janet's stomach aches with insatiable hunger. While her eyes are glued to the TV, she mainlines fries. Outside, Janet hears her front gate. Glancing out the window, she sees her manager's Audi pull into the drive. Shit. Janet sweeps half-empty cartons and grease-stained bags into the trash just as he walks in. He wastes no time. CBS, the network that broadcasts the Super Bowl, has thrown down the gauntlet. Janet needs to apologize.
Okay, apologize for what?
Yeah, Janet is right there with you. In fact, she bursts out laughing. She's not going to apologize, especially not for an accident. Apologizing for an accident makes it sound like it wasn't one. But her manager won't let up. Les Moonves, the head of CBS, is a famous asshole. I mean, now we know just how bad his behavior really is. But back in 2004, he's just the white dude who runs the network. He's stressed out, he's pissed off, and he's out for blood. Janet feels like she can't afford to get on his bad side. Her stomach turns. She wants to stay true to herself, but the swirl of criticism and the avalanche of negativity are sending her back to her childhood. Back when she'd do anything to please the men in charge of her life. Back when her body was a constant problem. Head down, Janet tells her manager, fine, let's get it over with.
My decision to change the Super Bowl performance was actually made after the final rehearsal. MTV, CBS, the NFL had no knowledge of this whatsoever. And unfortunately, the whole thing went wrong in the end. I am really sorry if I offended anyone. That was truly not my intention.
Okay, this sounds like a hostage video. Is Les Moonves sitting off screen with a gun?
Honestly, probably. But beneath Janet's pained expression and tone of forced sincerity, Janet's thinly veiled frustration is obvious. And the media pounces. They analyze her every word and compare it to Justin's version of events, speculating endlessly. Janet's phone rings. It's a week after the Super Bowl, and she's in the studio. Usually she switches off her cell while working, but today the sound is a welcome distraction from the painful silence. Janet's manager seems nervous as he blurts out the news. With the FCC investigating the Super Bowl incident, the Grammy Advisory Committee would prefer Janet not attend their 46th annual ceremony. Janet hears the words, but they don't make sense. Not attend the Grammys? That can't be right. Janet's been at the Grammys every year for the past 2 decades. When she isn't accepting awards, she's presenting them or performing. It's like being disinvited to Thanksgiving or being disowned. If the apology was supposed to put an end to the drama, it didn't. All it did was add fuel to the fire. It's March 30th, 2004, 8 weeks after the Super Bowl. Janet Jackson is right in the middle of promotion for the release of her 8th album, Demita Joe. Usually the packed schedule and the routine interviews are soothing for Janet, an easy blur of softball questions and upbeat press releases. But this time, she can't stop thinking about what happened at the Super Bowl. The press has started calling the incident Nipplegate, because the story just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Just like my nipples. I'm just kidding.
For starters, the FCC levies a record fine of $550,000 on CBS. But the fine is just the beginning. They're also launching an investigation. Like a legit entire investigation.
Okay, it takes longer than 9/16 of a second just to say the word investigation.
Preach! For this investigation, the FCC plans to question everyone involved, hundreds of Super Bowl, CBS, and MTV executives and producers. The head of the FCC, Michael Powell, is outraged, and he wants to see justice done. Even Congress gets in on the action. Apparently, hating Janet's body has bipartisan support. Congress passes laws calling for even stiffer fines for the shocking, indecent kind of behavior America's poor, innocent eyes were forced to witness. And they don't mean Nelly's crotch grabs or Kid Rock wearing the American flag or even Justin Timberlake's totally raunchy lyrics. They mean public enemy number one, Janet Jackson. Janet is the top story for weeks. The 2004 Super Bowl makes her the most searched name in the history of the internet. And honestly, most of these queries involved people trying to catch that half second of exposed breast. The frenzied internet searches even catch the attention of a Stanford graduate student named Javed Karim. He's like, what if somebody made it easier to organize and find all these videos? A year later, his streaming platform goes live. It's called YouTube.
Wow, you mean a successful internet platform was started by some perv? I'm shocked.
Well, they do say necessity is the mother of invention. But Miss Janet Jackson is about to fight back. 2 months after the Super Bowl, Janet still can't stop watching the news. She keeps wondering. Next to horrifying headlines about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, how does her right breast make front page news? How can her nipple ring possibly signify everything that's wrong with America? It's time for Janet to stand up for herself, and she knows exactly how to do it. She's heading to a major TV network, NBC this time, and she's doing it live from New York. That's right. In April 2004, 3 months after the Super Bowl, Janet's back on TV to host Saturday Night Live. And this time, she has a very different audience, an adoring one. And Janet is loving every minute. She loves how the sketches pack a punch, burying social justice in lighthearted fun. Most of all, Janet loves how the sketches give her a way to address the madness without getting smeared.
Honestly, SNL's true specialty.
Yeah, absolutely. From the moment Janet runs on stage, she's showered with love from the audience. The SNL cast is a dream. Soaking up good vibes in the green room after the show, Janet is relieved. It feels like things are finally getting back to normal. But they aren't. The sales numbers for her new album start coming in. And they're not as good as she'd hoped. Janet doesn't know where to turn. She's tried everything. She did what she was told. So why is she still being punished? Janet could smile through the pain of being under her dad's thumb. She could put up with Norman Lear's mind games. She could write herself out of depression. But this time, Janet is trapped. Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com.
We know you have your tried and true closet staples, but it can be fun to switch it up. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada.
Yeah, it's easy to find instant inspiration at Saks.com. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or bright Chloe blazer for brunch.
Okay, well, obviously this is making me just want to shop after we record this.
I know, and it doesn't take much for me wanting to shop.
No.
So. But if you're looking for a joyful shopping escape, which we all are,
yes,
then head to Saks.com for inspiring ways to shop for everything on your agenda.
Saks.com.
It's January 2006. Janet wears her cap low against the morning sun as she jogs along the beach. 5 miles, just like yesterday and the day before. Janet's videos are still missing from the MTV rotation. Her songs, once the topmost played on the radio, are banned. Magazines and talk shows that once welcomed her are suddenly fully booked. When she is featured, all conversations lead back to the Super Bowl. Her record label Virgin even canceled the Demita Joe tour due to poor sales. Janet feels like a ghost in the industry she's called home since she was 7 years old. Janet knows she's been blacklisted. She heard that Justin drove out to apologize to Les Moonves personally. Supposedly, that's why he wasn't disinvited from the Grammys, too. She knows Les still blames her for what happened. The FCC's huge fines have been an ongoing headache for CBS. But Janet also understands that it goes deeper than that. She was just a little too powerful, a little too female, and ever so slightly too black. Justin was wrong to tell an MTV reporter that he only got 10% of the blame. In terms of the impact on her career, Janet got the full 100%.
I guess that's what happens when you don't kiss an old white dude's ring.
Ain't that the truth? But Janet's also Joseph Jackson's daughter, and she's not comfortable with a narrative that makes her the victim. She refuses to sit back and wait. So she fills every minute of her schedule. She's recording her 9th album with longtime collaborators Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. She's planning a new world tour, making it bigger and better than the one Virgin canceled. And she's just finished shooting Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married? She had to fight her managers on that one. They begged her to turn it down, worried that taking the role would typecast her in black movies. But Janet couldn't care less, and now she's in pre-production for a role in a beautiful Lee Daniels film, for which she gained 50 pounds. It's a lot to juggle, but the last thing Janet wants right now is time on her hands. 2 years after the Super Bowl, the bear is still on her back. She thought she could shake it off by pushing herself to the limit. But now, looking at herself in the mirror, she doesn't see the star she once was. All she can see is an aging, angry woman.
Mm. So I guess she didn't kiss the mirror like someone I know?
Okay, number one, fuck off. Number two, practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, the story is about Janet.
Okay.
Her boyfriend, producer Jermaine Dupri, quietly enters the bathroom and stands her up in front of the mirror. He thinks she's beautiful, but he is not going to tell her that. She is. He challenges her to stay in front of the mirror until she finds some part of her that's beautiful. At first, Janet sobs. She cries until she can't cry anymore. But then her perspective seems to shift. Her reflection becomes not her, but just a woman, a stranger. Janet's eyes travel past the bulges and catch on her lower back. A coy dip and curve before the slope of her backside. That's the part that's beautiful. Janet smiles at her reflection. For the first time, she doesn't need anyone else to love her or tell her what's true. If Janet can see her own beauty, she has everything she needs. The assistant director snaps the slate in front of the camera. The set is quiet, the cameras are rolling, and Janet is gone, fully transformed into Patricia on Tyler Perry's sequel, Why Did I Get Married Too? On set, Janet can forget that she's blacklisted. Here, she's successful and loved, surrounded by a loving, chosen family. Part of that is her friendship with Tyler Perry. Although he's fast on track to becoming a Hollywood mogul, he came up in spite of a system that did everything to suppress his voice. Janet feels as safe on his set as she does at home with her brothers. She can laugh and cry and say anything she needs to.
I mean, listen, he let someone other than himself play one of the characters in his movies, and she should feel honored.
So true. She can also lose her shit in righteous rage, which is what she's about to do now. The DP, strapped into a Steadicam, loops Janet as she stands by the stairs of the set house. Off screen, the assistant director gestures, "Now." Janet stalks through the house. She hits her mark, pausing in the doorway of an office full of glass furniture, and rests her gaze on a golf club in the corner. She takes a step towards it, and then the take ends. Janet looks up to see everyone staring at her, which isn't too unusual. But then Tyler grabs her arm, leads her to a private room, and shoves a phone into her hands. Janet raises it to her ear. On the other end, a voice tells her that Michael, her brother, is dead. Janet drops the phone like it's a spider. She leaps up and runs out of the room. Tyler follows and wraps his arms around her. He holds her while she sobs. At the end of the day, Mike was her brother and her hero. Over her sobs, she hears Tyler call through the house. "That's a wrap, everyone." He's ending the day early. Janet lifts her head. "No, let's do the scene." Tyler gives her a look, but Janet is sure. After all, she's a Jackson. She keeps going.
Man, I mean, I get it, though. Like, as long as she's working, she doesn't have to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the crew gets back into position. For her whole life, Janet has only wanted one thing: to be the best. Every new album had to break records, including her own. She's pushed her body to the limit because the show must go on. But with Michael's death, something shifts in her. Now she knows that what she achieves isn't what matters. Janet's epiphany after Michael's death is like a hammer to the glass ceiling of her life. For the first time, she can see the sky. She's been on a treadmill for 20 years, pumping out album after album. And even though she fired her dad long ago, he was still there in the back of her mind. Joe Jackson's method for success became Janet's way of life. Unrelenting, back-breaking, hard work at all times. But now as she looks back at everything she's accomplished, she realizes she has nothing left to prove. What happened at the Super Bowl sucked, and it's bullshit that she's being punished for it. But she's still Janet fucking Jackson. She doesn't need or want the Super Bowl. She wants to have fun.
Yes. How many times does Cyndi Lauper need to tell everyone that's all girls want to do?
All the time.
Yes.
So in 2010, Janet gives herself a victory lap. Her number one's Up Close and Personal tour hits 35 cities, selected by fans who submitted suggestions on her website. She releases a book, True You, about her weight loss journey that makes the New York Times bestseller list. She signs a production deal with Lionsgate Films and gives a stirring performance in Tyler Perry's film adaptation of the beloved play for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough. And she becomes the first female pop singer to perform in the Louvre. Mm. Janet is still working constantly, but now she's off the treadmill. No pressure, all play. And she realizes that when she's open to new experiences, things magically come to her. Like Mattel's special edition Janet Jackson Barbie doll. As a kid, Janet was desperate to look like Malibu Barbie. She even kept one in her room as a reminder of her goals. And now, looking into the face of divinely Janet, complete with her signature mole, Janet's elated to think that little girls who look like her will play with this Barbie and know they're already perfect. In September 2017, with her newborn son in the Green Room nursery, Janet steps on stage for the revamped State of the World tour. And of course, she kills it. In 2019, she's inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That same year, she slays in Vegas with a four-month residency, Metamorphosis. In February 2020, she announces her upcoming new album and Black Diamond World Tour, which is unfortunately canceled due to a little global pandemic malfunction. Basically, Janet is busy. Like, really busy. Almost too busy to notice the winds are changing. Back in 2018, the year before she's inducted into the Hall of Fame, Justin Timberlake headlines the Super Bowl solo. He gets booed all night.
Okay, I know Janet said they're friends and she doesn't blame him, but I would still challenge Justin to a dance-off if I saw him in the streets and win.
Okay, well, I was actually going to say it'd be close, but yeah. I think you're right. You would probably win.
Thank you.
But shortly after, loyal Janet fans hit Twitter, claiming Super Bowl Sunday to forever be Janet Jackson Appreciation Day. It may have been 14 years since her career was derailed, but her fans are still clamoring for more. By 2022, Janet is finally ready to tell her story. And better yet, the world is finally ready to hear it. So in collaboration with A&E and Lifetime, Janet produces a documentary about her life, including never-before-seen footage and interviews about what it was like to grow up as a Jackson. In the documentary, Janet lays everything bare. She put all her secrets and fears out in the open for the world to see. But this time, it's on her terms. Because no matter what happens, Janet Jackson is still in control.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This is episode 2 of our 2-part series, Janet versus the Halftime Show. We use many sources when researching our stories, including True You by Janet Jackson and David Ritz, the BBC's Taking Control, the Janet Jackson Story, Billboard Magazine, Page 6, and Nikki Swift. Next week, we'll be joined by culture writer Clover Hope to talk about Janet Jackson then and now. We cannot wait to hear what Clover has to say. I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin. Lucy Gillespie wrote this episode. Kate Young is our producer. Our senior producers are Natalie Shisha and Ben Gray. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by Sam Ada. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.